Hello and welcome to this Control Risks podcast. My name is Çağdaş Çataltaş and I am the Associate Director of Western Europe Desk here at Control Risks. Joining me today is George Dyson, one of our Turkey analysts. Hi, George.
Hi, Çağdaş.
George, the 15th of July marked the first anniversary of the failed coup in Turkey. The authorities labeled the day as the Festival of Democracy, and hundreds of thousands of people marched in the streets while TV channels aired the coup-related coverage around the clock. However, there are growing concerns in some quarters about Turkey's democratic institutions, the rule of law, and the fact that it's becoming a more divided society. Turkish government is defiant in the face of criticism and says it's misunderstood by the West. How would you characterize the trajectory of Turkish society and its institutions a year after the coup attempt?
Yes, the turbulence of the last year has really brought to the fore underlying divisions within Turkish society. Immediately after the coup, the government managed to create this sense of national unity and purpose among its supporters, particularly around the public's defiance of this attempted armed takeover. But since then, the scope of this unity has shrunk. Now the mainstream opposition, as you point out, feels under threat from the government, feels a target of government ire. And with the government still on shaky ground, now a year after the coup, and against the backdrop of these divisions, this turbulence, we're going to see a likely continuation of its tendency towards populism in policy making. Now, for institutions, the government has done a lot to rid state institutions of the presence of the Gülen movement, the group that was that's been held responsible for last year's attempted coup d'état. However, as a consequence, there's concerns over skill shortages within key institutions, lack of a loss, if you like, of institutional knowledge. There's also a concern that within the government as to how it's going to resecure these institutions. How is it going to make sure this sort of thing doesn't happen again? Does it go back to using different interest groups to secure these institutions? All these questions are still very much up in the air, and this underlines why it's so important for companies to carry out really robust due diligence when they're engaging in Turkey, whether with government partners or with companies.
Indeed. Prior to the first anniversary of the coup attempt, Kemal Kılıçdaroğlu, the leader of the main opposition party, CHP, completed his so-called Justice March. He walked 450 kilometers from the capital, Ankara, to Istanbul and published articles in the New York Times and Britain's Guardian newspaper in which he said Turkey is becoming a near dictatorship. On the other hand, Meral Akşener, a dissident from the National Action Party, the smaller opposition turned ally recently to the governing AKP, is also rumored to be forming a new party. And what are your thoughts about Turkey's opposition, and what will the 2019 presidential election campaign look like?
Well, I think one of the defining aspects of the 2019 presidential campaign will be around the opposition finding a suitable umbrella candidate, or not being able to, as the case may be. They need to find someone who can appeal to Turkey's very divided opposition, but also can present sufficient charisma and political skill to challenge Erdogan.
Very tough job indeed.
Absolutely. When we just take a look at the 2015 opposition umbrella candidate, who is underwhelming to say the least. Now, Kılıçdaroğlu, as you point out, has had some success with his justice rally and his justice march as well. But I mean, still, this hasn't really been enough to elevate him and his party to a position where they can present by themselves a meaningful challenge to the government. Meral Akşener, for her part, she had a lot of potential starting out with this new party. She could hold potentially a new position to challenge the government from the centre-right. But so far, she hasn't played her hand well. Her rhetorical attacks on the government have pretty consistently failed to land. Ultimately, what her attempt to form a new party is most likely to do is simply divide the nationalist vote and weaken that block of the electorate's potential to challenge government. Going into 2019, Erdogan retains his charisma, his political instinct, and remains a very effective politician. He'll draw on the same rhetorical devices he's used up to now, security, the post-coup spirit, and successful economic growth. There are some clouds on the horizon. We've seen this last week, growing tensions between Turkey and Germany, and this potential blacklisting of certain German companies. This is going to be a big concern for German businesses operating in Turkey, and this has the potential to negatively impact the Turkish economy. Germany is Turkey's number one export destination, hugely important for Turkish economic success.
George, if we shift the focus from politics to security for a moment, even before the coup, Turkey was facing security challenges. And over the last 18 months, Istanbul alone has seen 4 mass casualty attacks claimed by Daesh and by several Kurdish militant groups. The last one was memorably on the New Year's Eve last year. Although we've seen a decline in large-scale attacks, I am interested to hear what our clients are most concerned about when working and operating in Turkey right now.
Well, clearly terrorism is a big concern for clients in Turkey. Our clients recognize that different groups and different geographies within Turkey present different challenges and threats, but they do want help in understanding the extent and how they can mitigate against these varying threats. Also, with respect to your point about a decline in attacks, this is the case, at least in large Western cities such as Istanbul, but our threat assessment for Turkey remains pretty much the same, and unfortunately we are predicting further attacks going forward, as with other Western European cities, other cities in the region. We're also looking at changes due to the changing conflict in Syria. The conflict in that country, the spillover from it has impacts on Turkey's security environment, and with that conflict changing form, we could see varying effects in Turkey going forward.
Amid all this challenging though, Turkey's economy seems to be doing well, with the GDP growing by 5% in the first quarter of 2017. Are there any opportunities for international investors in Turkey now, and what risks do they carry?
Well, there are definitely lots of reasons to invest in Turkey. Turkey has a growing population, dynamic industries, robust banking sector, and with the lira so weak at the moment, there are really great opportunities. With that in mind, these positive growth figures that you identify belie some of the big challenges facing the economy, and most serious of these is probably the growing current account deficit and the country's public debt profile, the highest it's been in 10-15 years. Beyond that, there are obvious risks around reputation and corruption. The government, in pursuing the Gulen movement, held responsible for last year's attempted coup d'etat, has seized assets and companies affiliated with the movement.
And purging the bureaucracy too?
Yep, absolutely. I mean, all of these underline why it's so important, whether you're engaging with government partners or business partners, to be very thorough in due diligence and make sure that you're not inadvertently engaging with an organization that's linked to terrorism or suspected of linking to terrorism, equally as damaging. The recent developments between Turkey and Germany serve to underline this very clearly.
Thank you very much, George. That was George Dyson, one of our Turkey specialists here at Control Risks. And thanks to you for listening to this podcast. I am Çağdaş Çataltaş. Bye for now.